Easy choices, hard life. Hard choices, easy life.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 97 of Rogue Startups. We're getting close to 100. Dun, dun, dun. I should have really had a sound effect for that, but I wasn't prepared.
I'll see if our handy editor can insert something there for you.
There you go. I hope we can have like some dramatic music thing there. But I'm excited to finally get it out there. I've had a lot of people asking, hey, where's that thing that I did for you back at MicroConf? I'm like, it's coming. I swear it's coming. We didn't forget. So for those of you out there in the audience listening that we got a quote from you at some point, I promise it's coming. We've got it all. It's like the Mondo epic. How many episodes are we going to turn that into? Like two episodes, right?
Yeah, it'll be a couple episodes, depending on kind of how we slice and dice it up. I'm about halfway through it right now.
It was just too much to throw out in one thing. As soon as you started adding up the time, you're like, oh, God, no, nobody's going to listen to an hour and a half podcast.
Yeah. And I think that the value would be diminished a little bit if we did make it one big podcast. So I think we can kind of cut it up into sort of themed segments or something like that. So yeah, it's a little bit in the works, but I'm excited about the amount of content that we have and the people that we had contribute to it, because I think it's kind of a tome of best practices and lessons learned and things like that.
Agreed. I thought we had a great cross-section of varying entrepreneurs of all walks of life, from very experienced to starting out to ones that have been running it for years, European ones, American ones, male and female perspectives. I think we have some pretty fantastic stuff in there. So I'm pretty excited to put that out there.
Yeah, for sure. How are things going with you, man?
You know, they're busy, but they're not busy in my business. So let me explain what I mean by that. So I'm kind of, I put a bunch of stuff out there that I'm waiting on things to happen. So I've got like estimates to do some work on finishing feature, and I have to drop a contract for that. But that's, I've gotten the estimate for it to finish up the review booster. And then I've got another estimate out there for a Romanian team to go, a Ukrainian team to go out and do a Shopify integration for me. And I'm, you know, we're going back and forth. That takes like an email every 2 days or something like that. And then I've got some content marketing that's going on for Recapture, and I'll get something in and I need to review it, but then I push it back to them and then I'm waiting. So, you know, I've got all of those little things going on for Recapture here and there. I need to push up the blog. That's not that big of a deal. Trying to handle customer support. Now that we've moved the plugins over to the new pricing structure, it's mostly just sort of mopping up the old customer support on there and getting ready to push out the new release for some fees and categories changes that we've had out there. So, yeah, I mean, lots of little tiny things here and there, but from the business perspective, it's not like taking up 40 hours of my week or anything like that. Mostly my freelancing job is doing that, because there's a production release that's impending here and we've been busting our hump on it for a long time now. And it looks like after all of that work, we're still not going to end up releasing it at the end of this week. Like we've been trying to. Yeah. Well, the good news is it's pretty complicated and there's lots of moving parts in it, and they just don't feel good about all the moving parts. The stuff that I'm working on is in good shape. So, you know, I don't have that stress to add to it, but there's still stress about it in general. So.
Gotcha.
How about you, man? What are you up to?
Oh man, things are good. We're kind of finding our groove with Seriously Simple Podcasting and Seriously Simple Hosting. It seems like things are kind of settling in now, which is nice. You know, it's 3 months almost since we launched, and so it feels good to have the product pretty well under control. We're going to launch a pretty decent size update this week that will hopefully squash what is our biggest kind of support issue. So that's nice that we're able to understand that well enough and fix it. And from there, really starting to think about marketing it in earnest, because I haven't really marketed it too much other than kind of being active in the WordPress community a little bit. But yeah, starting to think about what marketing channels I want to target and how, and being smart about, you know, my time and financial resources. So that's an experience I haven't had in a while, because for Podcast Motor, all the content we've done is just content marketing. And so that's been either free or easy to understand. But with Seriously Simple Podcasting and Hosting, looking at doing things like podcast sponsorships and paid placements on websites and things like that. So a little bit different approaches than I took with Podcast Motor. So it's kind of like a little humbling to say, like, oh, I've been, you know, marketing Podcast Motor for a couple of years now, and I'm kind of back to the drawing board with Seriously Simple Podcasting. But we're going to do some of the stuff the same too, so it's not all new. But yeah, it's a little humbling to feel like I'm starting marketing from scratch. But it's nice that the app is performing well. You know, all of our metrics are tracking the right way. So pouring some lighter fluid on it and marketing should do good. So that's the goal, and start kicking some of those off here in the next few weeks.
Cool. Yeah, I was when you were saying all of that, I was just thinking that it is a very humbling experience when you switch products and you think, God, you know, I've got all this marketing experience, I've got all this app experience or this whatever experience, and I move to my next thing, it's going to be fucking simple. And it's not. It's never fucking simple.
Yeah.
There's always, you know, there are things that you can take from that, lessons that you can learn, but then there are just specific nuances. The channels are different. The customers behave differently. They think differently. And all of the old tricks that you learned, you know, a fraction of them work in this new space. And so now you got to figure out all the new tricks. And it can be super frustrating, because there is definitely that humble pie aspect of it where you think, God, I've really got this nailed. And you go and, no, you don't have it nailed. You got to learn it again. There's never a time that you're not learning about your customers, your space, your new channels, your marketing tricks, all of it. That's one thing I've noticed with Recapture so far in 7 months of owning it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You know, I heard Rob say something interesting on Startups for the Rest of Us last week. I think he was talking about after kind of Hittail was winding down or selling, that he was looking at buying an app that was going to be in a space he didn't really have any expertise or domain knowledge or name recognition in. And he passed on it primarily for that reason. It kind of struck a chord to me, because, like, I'm in the same market, at least with podcasting for my two businesses, main businesses right now. And so in that sense, it's nice that I'm in the same boat, at least. But the channels, I think, that we're looking at are completely different. And so that's the challenging part. And I think you're a little bit in the same boat. I mean, all kind of like marketing, digital marketing tools that you're running, but your customer base is pretty different. So yeah, it's nice to have a little bit similar, but definitely some new challenges.
Yeah. And like you said, like, I don't have name recognition. I don't have an audience to start with. I don't have the expertise. Yeah. All of those challenges and things that gave Rob pause, I said, fuck it, I'll just do it.
I'm so much smarter. Fuck that guy.
You're so. And the truth is, you know, I don't regret the move that I made with Recapture. It was still the right move. It's just now I've got a different large mountain to climb. Whereas if you already have some of that stuff built up and you switch products within that audience, you still have that, you know, you haven't lost a lot of ground. But when you switch niches, when you switch types of products, when you switch whole domains, you know, that's a big change there, and you end up having to claw back from the ground, and that's a bitter pill to swallow sometimes. I still struggle with that, you know, thinking to myself, gosh, I just wish I had more expertise, or I wish I had a bigger audience, or I wish I had more recognition here, or more authority, or, you know, all of these things that other people in my niche have spent years building up. Now I'm sitting here feeling those deficits as I'm sitting in the same niche with them. So it's just a struggle that you have to work through, and, you know, you got to put in your time for that. There's no shortcut to a lot of that stuff. So
yeah, for sure. You know, on a sort of related note, talking about, you know, struggling and gaining new perspective, this is a pretty wild tangent, but it's finally summer vacation here. The kids got out of school about a week ago. And so, like, working from home is obviously really challenging. So I've been co-working a little bit, which is awesome. There's a really nice co-working space in Annecy here, which is about a 10-minute drive from home. And it's been really nice. I think even going into next year, I'll probably start co-working a couple days a week. Yeah, it's just such a cool environment for someone who's worked from home for a year now to have a place where other people are doing a lot of the same things. It's no wonder that it's so popular with people like us, you know, small businesses and entrepreneurs. Just the feel is so cool. Even though it's all in French here, so I understand about half of it, it's still, you can tell, like, the vibe is one you want to be a part of. So it's been pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, I like changing it up around here, going to I have a coffee shop and a microbrewery that I like to go hit because both of them have really solid internet. And there's a lot of people that go up and show, well, at least in the coffee shop anyway, there's a lot of people that go and actually spend their time and work there instead of working from home. Just because I guess the the vibe is better, you get better coffee, getting out of the house, avoiding the distractions, all that good stuff. I don't know many other people that go to a microbrewery to work. I might be sort of unique in that one. I think the temptation is too great for most people, but
that's just a Colorado thing, no doubt. Yeah.
I guess, yeah. I don't know. I don't have a problem starting with a beer. I can nurse a beer for a couple of hours in the middle of Friday afternoon and still get stuff done, so that's fine.
Right. Nice. Yeah. Nice. So what are we talking about this week, man?
Well, you know, I saw this TED Talk recently. And of course, the TED Talk that I saw was by Tim Ferriss. And, you know, most stuff by Tim Ferriss is really super awesome. You know, the 4-hour work week. And I haven't read of a lot of his other things, that like the 4-hour body and stuff like that. I'm just not into exercise and working out like that. Like, I'm not trying to optimize that aspect of my life. I just prefer a little bit of exercise every day and I'm good. But this particular one really took me aback. So first of all, it was like a big reveal for Tim in the talk. And I'm going to throw that out here because I think it's actually relevant to this. So I guess Tim has tried to commit suicide seriously more than once. Like, he had his very first time where he was like really close to the precipice, and he actually started planning the whole thing out. And then just literally some sheer lucky coincidences pulled him back from the brink. And that's when he started becoming very self-aware, and that's where he started looking internally very deeply. And as a result of both of those things, he sort of moved into a space of trying to find some simplicity in his life, because he was just like working all this crazy hours and doing all this crazy effort and using stimulants and depressants, you know, to wind himself up and wind himself back down after these 14-hour days. And it was just super, super unhealthy. And he found what he mentioned in there as the Stoic philosophy, which he's like, oh, that sounds super boring, you know, and he shows this picture of a wet cow, which is hilarious. But Stoicism in this particular context is about understanding that we are really the cause of our own suffering. Like the quote that he used in the TED Talk was from Seneca, which says, we suffer more often in imagination than in reality. And so he went into this whole deep dive. I mean, there's nothing about Tim Ferriss that isn't a deep dive. When he grabs a hold of something, I mean, he's got his own tunneling apparatus, and he goes straight to the core of the fucking earth on it. So you always get some great stuff out of that. But of course, he went into Stoicism and tried to understand what was it that made the Stoics happy. And one of the things that he found was that they did what he called in Latin the premeditatio malorum, which is basically the premeditation of evils, and understanding basically what are the worst case scenarios of something that could happen to you. And that's usually what trips us up, is fear of doing something. Like, there is a fear of starting a business. There is fear of failing at your business. There is a fear to trying to grow because you might not succeed at that. And all of these things that hold not just entrepreneurs back, but everybody back in general, Specifically, as an entrepreneur, though, I think we are deeply impacted by those fears on a daily basis. I know that I am, and for a long time before I was buying the SaaS, I just kept going over this in my mind. Am I good enough to move into a SaaS space? Can I actually accomplish this? What if I buy the wrong business? What if it fails? What if I buy it and the whole thing falls apart? You know, just like all this constant monkey mind shit going on in my head, making me think that you can't do this because there's all these things to be afraid about, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. I mean, I think that Dave, do you listen to his podcast?
I don't listen to it very regularly. Occasionally somebody will say, oh, you got to check out this specific episode, and then I'll jump into that. But I'm not a huge consumer of other podcasts at this point. It's very much pick and choose here and there, because I only listen to them when I'm on my business trip. So
yeah, I know. So funny. I'm the same. I used to listen to 20 hours of podcasts a week, and now I listen to about one or two maybe. And I don't listen to his anymore, but I think it's a really good podcast for a lot of mindset related things. There's a huge variety of types of people on there, but the premise of his show really is like deconstructing greatness. And that's like kind of what he tries to do, is chess players or power lifters or actors or writers, and how do they do things that make them like really great at stuff. And a lot of it revolves around stoicism and mindfulness and stuff. But this fear setting exercise that he kind of trademarked or brought to popularity as a modern version of stoicism, I think, is really powerful. In that, like, to really understand your fear, you have to define it and understand it and define it like pretty deeply. It reminds me of like the seven whys, like the Toyota guys come up with, right? So like, you know, what's the worst possible thing, Dave, that can happen if you quit your consulting job? It's that you go broke and have to sell your house. Or why is that so bad, right? Like, it's if you ask yourself why all these times and really understand like both really, really what is the worst possible thing that can happen and why is that so bad, then a lot of things that in your head seem just horrible end up being like either easy to mitigate or avoidable entirely. And if they do happen, probably not such a huge deal, because you can just go get another job or move to another house or whatever the situation is. I think that as you're looking at really important decisions, and Tim talks about that stoicism and fear setting have been important for him in his personal life, talking about his depression and having bipolar run in his family, but also in terms of his business, that he's applied a lot of these stoic philosophies and practices to his business practices and decisions have allowed him to kind of almost like take a step back from the reality of what he's facing and say, like, really, what's the worst possible thing that could happen if I make this decision? Break that down into its pieces, figure out how to mitigate the downside of those, and really understand kind of the real life context of what could happen, not just this shit that we make up in our brains. Because I would venture to say that as entrepreneurs, we probably have hyperactive senses of potential, right? Like we're very optimistic. We're also probably relative to the general public emotional about our businesses. And so we get a lot of the upside in our head and a lot of the downside. So yeah, that was a long kind of segue of kind of what he talks about, but it's a really powerful exercise. We did it. My wife and I did it after reading his book, before I quit my job. And it was really, really helpful actually.
So can you walk us through what you ended up doing for this? Because the reason I was super excited about this was that I need to plan a personal retreat. I've been meaning to do this for a very long time. And now that I've bought the SaaS and I've moved far enough into it that I can actually understand what are the real concerns of the business, I think now is the time to actually have a retreat and try to decide where it is I'm going to actually go with this. But in doing that, I was looking up a bunch of different, what are the things I want to think about on the retreat? And then I saw this fear setting exercise here. And I thought, this is perfect. This is like exactly what I need to do to help me do some long-term planning for the business here, because all of the things that I'm scared about might be things that are really just holding me back because I'm afraid of breaking the status quo of things, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's my biggest fear of all of my businesses is, if I do this, am I going to like totally fucking break it? Because if I break it, that's bad. Like, that's like the biggest thing that scares me. I've been so reluctant to make any changes in the plugins because my biggest fear is, if I change this and people stop buying it, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I totally get you, man. I mean, especially from my side, we adopted a plugin with 20,000 active installs that was not making any money. So so the fear of wrecking it and it costing us a bunch of money and not making any money was very real. I didn't do fear setting around that time, but yeah, not breaking shit is a real concern, especially on a successful tool that's already around, whether it's your plugins or the SaaS that you bought. But so with fear setting, what Tim really says as part of the exercise is, you break it down, you break your big kind of concern or concerns down into three categories. The first is defining it. The second is coming up with ways to prevent it entirely. And then if kind of the worst happens, what can you do to repair it? And so in his talk, he gives an example of he was running, I think he had like a dietary supplement, like a mental stimulant supplement that was his big business. And so he was like, I just want to go and live in England for 6 months. What's the worst possible thing that could happen? And he gave an example of like, he gets audited by the IRS and they shut down his business and he goes broke. So in defining it, he says, okay, what's the worst possible thing that could happen is, one, I get audited by the IRS. Okay, so how can he prevent that? And his very simple, in a very Tim Ferriss way to prevent that was to forward his mail to his accountant. So anything that's really important would go to his accountant could filter it. He would pay whatever, $100 a month to have his accountant deal with some of his mail. And the chances of the IRS auditing his business and him not being aware of it pretty much are zero at that point. If that wasn't an option for some reason, or that wasn't the choice he wanted to go with, then like, if the worst happened, what do? You just go get an attorney, right? And the attorney goes to the IRS and says, hey, my client was traveling, blah, blah, blah. Let's figure out a way to work this out. And like, your life is not over and your business is not sunk just because you went on a trip and kind of pursued like a lifelong goal of yours. But up front, it says like, wow, if I go on this trip, the IRS is going to come knocking at my door, my business is going to get shut down. When in reality, A, you probably can take steps to prevent this, but B, if the worst happens, if you ahead of time kind of define what these really bad things could be, you can have a plan to kind of counteract them if they happen. So like, you define, you plan to prevent, and then if the worst does happen, then a good game plan ahead of time to repair these bad things that can happen. So that's the framework that he kind of proposes.
Right. And then he actually extends it a little bit than that. So that's sort of the – he had a three-page thing. So that's the first of the three pages there, right? Then the second one is where he actually goes through and says, well, let's quantify what happens if we go through and do this thing that I'm afraid of. What are the benefits of that? Like, even if I just attempt it, or I'm only even partially successful, what do I get out of that here? So this way you get to look at the fear and say, what's the conservative upside of me facing this fear and defining all of these problems that are here and putting some mitigation things in place? Is it substantial? Is it minimal? Is it off the charts good? You know, that sort of a thing, because that's the thing that we don't really quantify. At least I certainly don't when I'm thinking about these things. What is the potential upside of what it is that I'm afraid to do? So like, for example, with the plugins, I was afraid to raise the prices for a long time because I was afraid that I'd break stuff, people wouldn't buy it anymore. Well, the upside to that is that, well, I get more money. And if I have more money, there's other things I can do with that, like hire a support person. And then that makes my life better because then I'm not sitting here grinding support on a day in, day out basis. So there is a pretty substantial upside to going through that process. And I mean, I don't know how everybody else's brains work. I can only really say how mine works. I have a complete monkey mind, exactly like Tim Ferriss talked about in this talk. So when I'm thinking about these things, it's usually like, ah, fear. Ah, here's the bad things. Ah, I don't know what's going to happen. Ah, I just don't want to think about that anymore. And you move on. But by breaking it down systematically and saying, here's what it is, here's how I can mitigate that, here's the worst that it could possibly be, and here's the benefit of actually doing that or making a as Tim called it, a base hit, right? If you're going to throw in a sports analogy here. If I did a base hit in baseball, what do I get out of this? So you spend some time figuring out that, right?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the – that's the real big thing, in my opinion, where this pushes you past those fears. Because when you can start to see on the other side, gosh, you know, if I do that and I get past all this scary shit, here's the good stuff that could actually happen on the other side. And I don't think that we quantify that enough as entrepreneurs. I think that's part of the problem with fears. We just look at the fears and say, shit, I can't do that. Or, ah, that's too scary. Or, man, that's just – That's too dangerous. I can't do that. You know, that's where my brain kind of stops. And I think the second page part moves you past that quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. We did a fear setting exercise. My wife and I did before I quit my job last year. And we've been planning it for a long time, but did the fear setting exercise to make sure that we were kind of prepared more on the downside than anything. We didn't sort of implicitly do this upside analysis, but inherently we knew that the opportunity to live abroad and have our kids learn another language and experience the culture and all these kind of things was really, really, really strong. And the downside of quitting my job was understood because we went through this process. But I think in the back of our minds, we knew that like doing this would be a great thing. And then Tim talks a little bit about like the cost of inaction the last step. And we knew that it was like all the stars aligned in our personal lives. My daughter was finishing her last year in preschool and would be going into kindergarten in the US. And so if we were going to do it, it was like the end of the year, the school year, take our trip, find a new place to live, and get our kids settled in school here. And the cost of inaction would have been huge because the upside we understood, the downside we understood, not doing it then probably would have meant we never would have made this move because then your kids get into school and their friends and da-da-da-da-da. Like making this move when our kids are 10 would be really hard.
Right.
So in our little micro context here, we did sort of inherently know you got to do it now. Or you might never do it. And I think in business, we all probably know these times in our businesses where like if you're going to make that pricing move, the time is now. Because if you don't, then your competitor is going to, or WordPress in general is going to move to a different model or whatever it is. Or if you don't do it, then what does the cost of you doing support mean to your business? I think that fear causing inaction is maybe the worst part of fear in your business and decision making.
Yeah. And while I didn't do a precise fear setting thing, I did consider the cost of inaction with the plugins on the raising of prices. And I knew back in February or whatever that there was no way if I didn't get support off my plate, recapture was not going to grow and I was going to lose my mind. It was absolutely blatantly clear. By now, I would be cuckoo. I would be podcasting from the middle of an insane asylum or under Thorazine. It was going to be too much. There was just no way for me to continue doing that and not either, you know, piss off the customers or just go batshit insane. There was no way.
Just so. When you thought you'd seen everything, next week from the insane asylum.
Yeah. Oh. Well, instead of rogue startups, it'll be Thorazine startups next week. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But no, so I mean, yeah, I really like Tim for a lot of this mindset stuff that he talks about. Similar to what you said, I'm not huge on the like over the top fitness or diet stuff that he gets into, but he really has pegged the mindset stuff really well. I think fear setting is one of them. He has kind of the inverse of it, which is like dreamscaping, I think is what he calls it. It's essentially like begin with the end in mind. It's his whole lifestyle design thing, right? Like where do you want to be? Work backwards from there. And figure out the component parts that it takes to get there and have that base hit you're talking about, Dave, to get started on that goal. So, I mean, anyone who hasn't read The 4-Hour Workweek, as trite as it might sound in our world, it really is just a mindset book. At this point, a lot of the specific strategies that he mentions are kind of outdated and might not be applicable, but it's a great mindset book for sure.
Yeah. And specifically, I'd like to say this to all those in our audience that are struggling trying to get your business up, or that you're afraid of making a particular move, or you're just not sure what you should be doing next because you just have so many possible options in front of you. I would strongly recommend sitting down and doing this fear setting exercise specifically around the one thing that scares you the most, or the one thing that's blocking you the most. Because if you were to genuinely take the 1 hour that Tim recommends doing, it's like 20 minutes for the first one and 15 for the last two, and then some time to take a break in between or whatever. Just sitting down and putting those things on paper. Don't sit down and think about it, but you got to write it down to really – I mean, if you're like Tim, where your mind is just all over the place, writing it down kind of concretizes it in a way – that you can really see the scope and the depth of the problem. If you were to do that, my guess is you would probably figure a way to break through whatever that is that's holding you back. So that's my advice for this week to anybody out in the audience that's struggling with that.
They gives a shit. No.
Yeah. For our six listeners that are actually listening, I guess. Yeah.
No, man, I absolutely agree. It's a great exercise. Just being mindful of your feelings, and understanding them and what they really could be and what they mean is going to do enormous things. I think most of us are so quote busy in our businesses and our lives that we don't take time to stop and think and put our phone down. But yeah, I mean, whether it's a retreat or just a walk at the park or going for a run or whatever that lets you be able to disconnect and think about stuff, I think is really valuable. I've not taken one of these founder retreats. I would love to. But I think that forcing yourself to be in an environment to be able to take the time to think about these things is something that everybody should afford themselves if they want to be successful.
Agreed. Agreed. And I'll close out with one quote that Tim pulled from a friend of his that he considers a modern day Stoic. And the guy's name isn't really that important. He's a Polish Solidarity guy who emigrated to the United States after having basically his world collapse around him in Poland because of all the political strife that's there. And coming here to the U.S., he basically had to rethink every single choice that he ever had. And, you know, it was not going to be an easy thing, but he basically has one quote that he lives by now, and that is easy choices, hard life, hard choices, easy life. If you're willing to make those hard choices, then you're going to have an easier time of it in life because you're not going to be plagued by all the things that cause you all these great fear and strife and uncertainty here, because you can actually make decisions about them and they will definitely improve things overall. So with that said, if you have any comments about stoicism, about fear setting, or something that you are doing right now to help move past roadblocks in your life or your entrepreneurial journey, we'd love to hear about that. Shoot us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you get a chance, we'd always love a review in iTunes. Link in the show notes. Until next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.